Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and Salman Rushdie has been in the news recently as one of the most famous targets of a religious fatwa. His name is inexorably linked to controversy and the clash of Western and Islamic cultures. But it's a new novel and a pending memoir about his life that are currently drawing headlines for Mr. Rushdie. His most recent work is called Luca and the Fire of Life, and it's a young adult novel that draws on the surreal tradition of Alice in Wonderland. Salman Rushdie is a winner of the Booker Prize for Literature, the Distinguished Writer in Residence at Emory University position, and he's a knight. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show, Salman. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hello there. Nice to be back. Yeah.
So your character, Luca, is in many ways locked into a video game. Is that the looking glass of our generation?
Well, I thought it was obviously I watch video games a little bit from the outside. I'm really lousy at playing them. But it seemed to me like the structure of the video game is often very like the ancient structure of the quest myth, you know, whether it's the Holy Grail or whatever it might be. So it was a way for me of taking a very, very modern narrative technique and using it to tell a very old sort of story.
Narrative technique. Do you see video games as a contemporary version of storytelling?
Well, some of them are. I mean, I think there are games now where the player has an enormous amount of control over the story of the game. You know, it's not simply a linear movement through levels in the way that happens in Luca and the Fire of Life. People can actually choose which direction to go in and in a way what game to play. So you become the storyteller yourself to an extent.
Now, I understand that your younger son demanded this book because your older son had one written for him, which you wrote like 20 years ago, Harun and the Sea of Stories. How old is your son, and how explicit?
He's now 13. He was 12 when I finished writing the book.
And is that kind of a literary license, or did he actually say, "Dad, you have to write me a young adult book"?
No, he was extremely forceful about it. He said it was extremely unjust that his brother had a book and he didn't, and it was only the right thing to do to come up with a second one. So I was very much put on notice that I had to do it.
And a primary theme of this book is an exploration of the bond between father and son.
Yeah, I think that really is at the heart of it. It's a story about how the love between parents and children drives both the parents and the children.
Are you saying something that you felt needed to be said about that?
Well, just the fact of it for a start, but also the particular father and son in the book. Rashid, the storyteller, and his son Luca are they're a long way apart in age. Rashid is 50 years older than his son, and actually that's very much the situation in real life. I mean, I'm 50 years older than my younger son Milan, and I think when there is such a big age gap, then the subject of mortality, of life and death, becomes much more acute and vivid. You think about it a lot more than you do if you have a kid when you're 25.
Yeah.
So the book, in a way, the engine of the book is that question, the question of the danger that you as a child might lose your father, or that you as a father might not live to see your child grow up. And in the book, the father is actually in real danger of dying, and the boy has to go and steal this magical substance, the fire of life, which is the thing that will save his father's life.
Salman Rushdie, my guest, and the adventures in Luca really are all focused on time, past, present, future, forgetting, growing up. So is time and its inescapableness your chief adversary in the story?
Yeah, I mean, it's very much a book about the inexorable ticking of the clock. And what can you do about it? And I mean, but there are counterweights. For instance, when Luca is born, his parents say, and I think it's true, that having a child in the house, in a way, turns back time and makes you feel young again. So I think, children do have that ability to give their parents the sense of a kind of reborn or a renewed youth. But the clock keeps ticking.
And the main character in the book is crusading to save his father, as you say, who himself is a master storyteller, and I love his title, The Shah of Blah.
Yeah, The Shah Shah of Blah is what people call him when they don't like his stories. If they like his stories, they call him the Ocean of Notions.
So there are aspects of this that obviously relate to your life.
Of course. I mean, the character of the storyteller is a kind of send-up of myself, frankly.
This book is your second foray into young adult fiction, as we mentioned. Does it share anything with the first, Harun?
Well,
it shares
the central family. I mean, that's what it shares. But I was, the storyteller and his children, and wife, that's the little family unit which is at the center of both books. But I was very keen not to go back where I'd been before, not just to repeat myself, you know, not just to have a return to the sea of stories, but to find a different imaginary world to enter and a different motivation for going there, if you like. So everything other than that central family unit is completely different.
How does somebody who writes mostly very sophisticated works for adult audiences write for a young adult? Do you, you know, restrain your vocabulary, or how do you do it?
Well, I think you have to find a language, and actually, fortunately, the language of the fable or the fairy tale or the folk tale is a very interesting language. It's one in which you can write quite simply but say things which are quite complex often. And once you've found that tone of voice, you don't really have to make that many adjustments for the children. And I think the great thing about children or younger readers as readers is that you have to take them very seriously. You know, I mean, many people who have written for children much more than I say that you should never write down to children. You should, in a way, write up to them.
And young adult literature, you're probably familiar with the genre, is extremely serious. There are heavy, heavy books, and sometimes parents complain about that. But the education professionals tend to say, no, this is the stuff that the kids at 12 and 13 are starting to think about.
Absolutely.
And
I think children grow up faster. You know, I think that a 13-year-old boy today has, you know, is a lot more sophisticated in many ways than I was at 13. And I see children's literature now, or young adult literature, dealing with very heavy-duty issues, you know, of child abuse and violence and crime and drugs and so on and so on. And clearly, both publishers and writers and readers have found that is suitable, you know, that readers of that age are actually able to deal with that. And so in this book, I guess the serious subject is the subject of life and death. And I think... you know, if you find the way of doing it, then you can speak to younger readers about these issues.
Salman Rushdie, our guest on WNYC. His new book, a young adult novel, is called Luca and the Fire of Life. Now, your first young adult novel, Harun, was published a year after the fatwa calling for your life from the Ayatollah Khomeini. That was in 1989. The book came out in 1990. Were they connected in any way?
They were, sort of. I mean, in that book, the kind of engine driving that book, if you like, was trying to find a way of explaining to my then young son some of the things that were some of the issues that were surrounding his father. So the villain in that book is somebody trying to destroy the world of stories. And it clearly was a kind of fable or allegory that arose out of things that were happening to me at that time. This one, as I say, the problem is different. I'm happy to say that those particular problems have faded away. And this one is the more existential problem of life itself.
Can I ask you, while you're here, Yusuf Islam, formerly known as Cat Stevens,
yeah,
made an appearance at the Rally to Restore Sanity and Orfeer with Jon Stewart and Colbert. And you are linked to him in many people's minds because of his statements calling for the fatwa against you to be carried out back
then.
Yeah,
I mean, I was very disappointed to see him there, and indeed did take a moment to reach out to Jon Stewart and express my disappointment, which I think he now understands.
Did you get a reaction from him?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, we had two or three conversations. I think by the end of it, he understood my point.
Despite your understandably ambivalent feelings about Islam and the many things you've written, a critique of religion from somebody who was raised in it, you are on the record as supporting the Park 51 Mosque and Community Center project. Tell us how come.
Well, it's not exactly supporting it as just supporting the right of people to have freedom of religious observance. You know, I mean, I think the thing is that, of course, I understand the sensitivities around the Ground Zero site. You know, I mean, who would not, especially if you live in the city? But I just think that if you think about the First Amendment, which is one of the things I most value about this country, the First Amendment equally protects freedom of speech and freedom of religious observance. So if we want to speak up for the First Amendment and value its defense of free speech, we have to value the other part of it too. And I think, frankly, people should be allowed to have a way of following their religion. I'm not myself a great fan of mosques, you will be amazed to hear, or of mullahs, or of any religion, frankly.
Yes.
But it seems to me if people want to be able to practice it, they should be allowed to. I mean, for instance, there was a mosque inside the Ground Zero, inside the trade towers. Nobody objected to that. After the towers fell, there was an Islamic religious ceremony at the site to commemorate the many Muslims who died in those towers, and nobody objected to that. There's already a mosque four blocks away from the site. You know, so 2.5 blocks is not okay, but 4 blocks is. I just think it's not a defensible position. I think people should be allowed to do it if they want to.
Are you familiar with or have any opinion about the imam who wants to develop it and his own work and whether he's the bridge builder you would like to see him?
I don't know very much about him. I've heard stuff for and against.
Mm-hmm.
But frankly, the world is full of priests one doesn't like. You know, I'm not a big fan of the Pope, but nobody talks about abolishing Catholicism.
It seems like there are a lot more atheism books coming out. Dawkins, Hitchens,
yep.
Several others. Does that surprise you? Do you like that?
Well, I mean, I think it's an important part of the argument. And somehow in America, it's a more necessary part of the argument than elsewhere. You know, I think if you're in Europe these days and you express atheist views, they're kind of so commonplace that nobody can really work out why you're bothering to make a big deal about it. But this being a much more religious country in many ways than England or Europe, the subject of religious disbelief is more shocking to people. It needs more clarifying, needs more arguing through. So in that sense, yes, I'm pleased to see it.
You come from India originally. Do you have an opinion about President Obama endorsing a permanent seat on the UN Security Council for them?
Yeah, I think it's kind of overdue, frankly. You know, I think India is one of the world's great democracies and really should be there. I mean, the Security Council is really composed of mostly of those countries who were on the winning side in World War II. And that's a little, you know, distant now. I mean, I think what is great is to see the United States and India coming closer together, because for a long, long time, Indians felt that the United States was more in favor of, tended to lean towards Pakistan in its diplomacy and away from India. And really, that changed during the Clinton administration. I think when President Clinton went to India, that did a great deal to build new bridges between these countries. And the Obama visit, I'm sure, will strengthen those ties. And so they should. I mean, these are two great democracies, and they should be allies.
Pakistan is such an important ally/trouble spot. Do you think U.S. foreign policy in any sense has to choose between the two?
No, I mean, I think I don't think you have to. I think in some way, you know, America's interests lie in Pakistan as well because of the terrorist problem and the radical Islam problem. But I do think that Pakistan needs to be lent on in order to persuade them to stop protecting and giving safe haven to various terrorist groups. I think that's a problem for the whole world.
Do you ever reflect on what it means that you can once again be comfortable appearing in public and pre-announced?
Well, I'm just really happy to have a chance to meet my readers. You know, it's been a long time now. It's been 12 years since this problem faded away. But still, I always find that one of the great things in a writer's life is to have the chance of meeting his readers and talking to them directly, face-to-face. It doesn't happen that often.
There's a Salman Rushdie memoir in the works for 2012, correct?
Yep. I finally decided I'm going to tell this story. I'm in the middle of doing it. I mean, I've written about a quarter of the book. I hope to finish it by the end of next year and have it come out the year after.
Do you blog or tweet? We had Margaret Atwood on recently, who's got like 85,000 Twitter followers.
God, well, maybe I should. No, I have no presence on that platform. I had to take down a fake one the other day, but I haven't done it. I have never tweeted.
A fake one? What happened?
Somebody tried to be me on Twitter. Somebody pretended to be me, and I had to have them taken down.
I don't know if that 85,000 figure is correct, but that's what I heard. But the 140, 160 characters, have any interest in trying to express yourself that way?
I haven't yet, but everybody tells me I should, so I'm trying to get my mind around it.
All right. Salman Rushdie, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks a lot. Thanks very much.